On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We like to think that harmful chemicals are somewhere else, in a tanker, in a factory, far away. But it turns out that everyday products in our houses, our homes, our sunscreen, toothpaste, soap, laundry detergent, perfume, contain some pretty scary stuff. Even products labeled environmentally friendly aren't necessarily as pure as you'd like to think. This hour On Point, the chemicals right around us and their risks. You can join the conversation. Do you know what's in your shampoo, your air freshener, your lotion? Are the causes of cancer and more right there in our homes? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now in the studio is Julia Brody, Executive Director of the Silent Spring Institute, which studies the links between environmental chemicals and our health, especially women's health and breast cancer. She's co-author of the big new report, Endocrine Disruptors and Asthma-Associated Chemicals in Consumer Products, out last week in the journal Environmental Health Perspectives. Julia Brody, thank you so much for being with us today. Thanks for coming in.
I'm delighted to be here.
And with us from San Francisco is Ruth Ann Rudell, Director of Research at Silent Spring Institute and also a co-author of the big study. Ruth Ann Rudell, thank you very much for being with us from San Francisco today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
It's great to have you both. All right, Julia Brody, tell us what you did here and why it matters.
Well, let's start out with the why we did this. Mm-hmm. The Centers for Disease Control has been tracking chemicals in Americans for a while now. And
not in our products, but actually
in
us,
our bodies,
in our bodies,
in our mm-hmm. blood, in mm-hmm. urine samples. Mm-hmm. And Silent Spring Institute has, for about 10 years, been studying chemicals in our homes, in our air and dust. And we're finding out that chemicals from consumer products are showing up across the board in Americans, in our blood and urine, in our homes. And these are chemicals that are coming from everyday consumer products. So we wanted to find out, what are the products that they're coming from? Where are they coming from? And could people avoid them? So we created a list of chemicals that have been shown in laboratory studies to affect hormones, or they are related to asthma. Most of the research comes from laboratory studies. There are some human studies of these chemicals as well. We took these 66 chemicals that are potentially linked to cancer, children's growth, fertility, and asthma, and a range of health effects, and tested for them in 50 types of household products.
Okay.
We picked a range of everyday products, cleaners like laundry detergent and dishwasher detergent and soap. And
things we use every day.
Personal care products, shampoo, mm-hmm. lotion, toothpaste, mm-hmm. and some household items like shower curtains and cat litter.
Mm-hmm.
We sent them to the lab and tested for these 66 chemicals. We found 55 of our target chemicals, and we found them in a majority of products, even those products where we had been trying to find products that would avoid them.
So-called green products or environmentally friendly products.
Yes, we went shopping with a set of criteria that we hoped would reduce exposures to these chemicals. So, for example, we chose products that some of the products we chose were from plant-based ingredients,
mm-hmm.
and the labels said that they didn't have fragrance or parabens. And a variety of these chemicals that were on our target list.
And I've
even
seen your report. These are brands, many of them, that we associate with green, clean, safe, not high chemical brands.
Yes, these are products that are trying to be responsive mm-hmm. to what consumers want in the way of healthier products.
Mm-hmm.
And we found that even in those products, a majority contain some of our target chemicals.
Ruth Ann, tell us about the chemicals you were looking for, the classes of chemicals here. 66 different ones you were looking for. You found the vast majority of them. Endocrine disruptors, what are their effects? And what else did you find here, Ruth Ann?
Sure. We looked for... So endocrine disruptors affect hormones. They can mimic certain hormones or block the action of hormones. We looked for an antimicrobials, triclosan and triclocarban. They're on products that are labeled as antibacterial, but they're also in some other products that aren't labeled. And we looked for phthalates, which are in plastics and in some other solvents and cosmetics. We looked for parabens, which are a common preservative in like lotions and shampoos. We looked for UV filters, which are the active ingredients in many sunscreens. Some of those are estrogenic. We looked for some chemicals in fragrances, some synthetic fragrances that are known to mimic estrogen, and some and fragrances and some other classes of compounds that are in cleaners that are known to be asthma triggers. Now, most of the data for these comes from laboratory studies, and we know the chemicals have these activities, but what we are working to find out is how much are people exposed to, and whether when you consider all the chemicals together, there might be some health effect.
So in, I don't know, what portion of everyday products, Julia, did you find problems? Like most of them, I mean, looking at a sheet here that shows at least by category, and I'm just looking down, you know, cat litter, pillow protector, diapers, floor cleaner, laundry detergent, hand soap, bar soap, body lotion, shampoo. I mean, it seems like almost everything had the chemicals.
We did find these target chemicals in a majority of the products we tested, but we did find 11 products that were free of them. So That was
not categories, but particular products.
11 products okay. Had no target chemicals
in them. Out of 200 and something.
Well, keep in mind that some of the products, in order to get the most knowledge for the dollar, some of the samples were combinations of products.
So you did this, and I was curious why. For conventional products, that is, big brands that don't claim to be particularly green, they're just products that we use and use a lot of them, you'd pour them all together, like a face lotion or a deodorant, I guess. When you tested them together to see what was in them collectively, not individually. Why did you do that?
Well, our science goal for that portion of the study was to get the broadest picture we could for the dollar of what Americans are exposed to in everyday products. So In order to get the broadest picture, we wanted to test a large number of products, and so we combined them. So it's kind of a snapshot average picture of what you would be exposed to from these types of products.
I want to dig in narrowly here eventually, but broadly speaking, Julia, what were the most problematic categories of product, everyday product?
Well, I would say that we saw substantial concentrations in fragranced products, so people could reduce their exposures by avoiding fragranced products
such as air
fresheners, dryer sheets, perfumes.
Those little pine trees hanging in the taxi cab. You don't want to hang out with them a lot.
you can smell them, and so you can tell that they're off-gassing, as we would say as scientists.
Dryer sheets, those little things you can put in with the clothes so that they don't get staticky and they smell so amazingly fresh when they come out. Problematic?
Right. Well, we've been trained by advertising to think that a particular smell means fresh and clean. Mm-hmm. But now when I walk down the street and smell someone's dryer vent,
the exhaust,
I think chemicals.
What else?
We saw a lot of DEHP, a phthalate that has effects on males, in vinyl products, and that's of concern, particularly because sometimes people with asthma will use a pillow protector that could be made of vinyl to keep the dust mites in. But the phthalates have respiratory effects, so it might not be the best choice. And there are alternatives that are not vinyl. So
and effects on males? I know there's a lot of reproductive concern around some of these chemicals. Is that what you're talking about?
There's concern about the development of baby boys. Some studies have seen effects on the development of baby boys' genitals. Mm-hmm. There have been some studies of effects on male sperm count and mobility.
Mobility?
Motility.
Okay.
Whether the sperm can swim.
I see. Okay. Let them move. Sunscreen comes up is a big product of concern here.
Yes, those results were worrisome for us because, of course, we're putting sunscreen on to avoid exposures that could result in skin cancer. So I think this study suggests that another reason to wear hats and long sleeves and stay in the shade.
is not to use sunscreen.
Because the sunscreens did contain some chemicals of concern, and the alternative sunscreens actually contained 7 chemicals that were not on the label, so you can't really be sure what you're buying.
Ruth Ann, what kind of chemicals did you find in sunscreen, alternative and otherwise?
Well, the active ingredients, the UV filters, some of them are weak estrogens, and they were present, both labeled and unlabeled, in conventional and alternative sunscreens. There are also fragrances, cycloxyloxanes, which are another class that makes products smooth, and parabens as preservatives.
You know, Julia, I know that breast cancer is kind of a founding issue for the Silent Spring Institute, and cancer, I guess, in some respects more broadly. And I guess the question that comes to people's minds are we just living in an environment that we actually buy and you know, voluntarily and bring into our homes that we're turning into a menace to our own health?
Well, that was the starting point for this research. We had been concerned about the number of chemicals that are in use in common products that are estrogen mimics. We know that we've known for years that estrogen is related to breast cancer risk and that pharmaceutical hormones can affect breast cancer risk. So there's a question about what the sum total of all these synthetic estrogens we're exposed to might mean for breast cancer and other hormonal cancers. And in particular, we're concerned about exposure during vulnerable periods in the life cycle when the breast is developing.
We're going to come back and look at that and that question that hangs over these products. Julia Brody, Ruth Ann Riddell, please stand by. We're talking about dangerous chemicals in everyday products. You can join us, 800-423-8255. What's your question? 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about dangerous chemicals in everyday products, unannounced, often unlabeled, all around us, and suspected in everything from cancer to asthma and allergies. You can join the conversation this hour. Do you know what's in your floor cleaner, your deodorant, your air freshener, your sunscreen, your life? And are we killing ourselves every day with our everyday products? Do you even want to know this? Is it vital that we do? Did you think green products were all safe, all sunshine and flowers? How do we get manufacturers to just stop using these chemicals? Or is there a private solution to this, a personal solution? We'll look at that. We're at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. The new study out from the Silent Spring Institute, published just last week, came out in the journal Environmental Health Perspectives. You can find a link to it at our website, onpointradio.com. Julia Brody is Executive Director of Silent Spring. Ruth Ann Riddell is co-author of the report. Ruth Ann Riddell is Director of Research. They're also a co-author joining us today from San Francisco. We've got a lot of people with questions and life experience here. I mean, some are writing in online. Here's one, where did I put it? From Marion. And she says, I was recently diagnosed with melanoma, the most aggressive type of skin cancer. I am only 24. Every day for the rest of my life, I'm going to have to protect my skin from the sun. With what?
That's a very tough question. I think that when we have to make decisions that take into account our own life and our own risks, and certainly people who are at high risk for skin cancers are going to need to protect themselves from the sun as a priority.
But what do you do? Does it just mean you try and avoid it? Here's Mary, and she's got a dire situation, one she's got to pay a lot of attention to, and yet you're saying even so-called safe sunscreens are not necessarily looking all that safe.
I think she's going to need to consult with her doctor and think about what are the priorities for her personally.
So maybe weigh one risk against another.
Yes.
Well,
Ruth Ann?
This is Ruth Ann. I was just going to add that I think that we're definitely not saying don't use sunscreen, but just to use it judiciously. But a second thing is that the sunscreen, I think, is a great example of the challenge to what they call green chemistry, this is a time where what we're asking manufacturers to do is to try to develop the safest products that they can. And there's some room for better sunscreens.
So let's look for that and hope for that. But meanwhile, Julia, why is it? I mean, I think some people are still just galled that here we are, and we're in a consumer society. All kinds of products are put out there, and yet you're saying they've got chemicals in them. And looking at these charts, it looks like a lot of chemicals in them that may well be threats to us. Why do we live in that kind of circumstance? Why isn't somebody taking these chemicals out? Why isn't somebody saying no to this? Why is it allowed?
I think most people assume that products have been tested, the chemicals that go into products have been tested for safety before they go on the market. But in the U.S., that's really not the case. We have a patchwork of requirements for products that really lets a lot of these chemicals fall through the cracks. Our regulatory system is decades old and needs to be modernized so that we're collecting the data that we need about the potential health effects of chemicals before we put them on the market.
The industries themselves have been quick to push back here and say, you've just got it wrong. Here's a senior scientist for the Personal Care Product Council. The results of this study are not new or surprising and should not alarm consumers. The spokesman for the American Cleaning Institute. They are alarming consumers unnecessarily. They're disappointed in this. They wrongly insinuate safety concern over cleaning products, ignores enhanced efforts to communicate with consumers over ingredients. And right on, almost every industry that you touch came out and said, no, you just got it wrong.
Yes, we did see a lot of pushback from industry. I think that the science is becoming more and more clear, and we're seeing major medical associations like the Endocrine Society, the Institute of Medicine, the President's Cancer Panel, coming out with statements saying, we don't know enough, but we do know some important things about chemicals and their potential biological effects. We do need to pay attention to this.
But how long do we stay in this kind of limbo where, it's been years now since concerns over many of these chemicals have been raised? It's very hard to prove it absolutely. How do you have a test population of, I don't know, half the population using them and half don't? We all use them. Is it just perpetually going to be in limbo out there? And meanwhile, look at cancer rates in this country. Look at all kinds of health problems.
You're on to a very important point there, that when we want to find out whether a drug is safe and effective, we do a clinical trial. We set up a study where we give half the people the drug and half the people not, and then we wait to see what happens. We would never do that with chemicals and consumer products. We would consider it unethical.
But we're doing it every day. These products that you describe here are in every single listener's cupboards at home, I'm sure.
Exactly. That's why we need a different framework for evaluating what's safe. We need to look carefully at the biological effects of these chemicals and then say, okay, if this chemical makes breast cancer cells grow in a laboratory, maybe that's a reason to think twice before putting it into shampoo.
Julia Brody, Ruth Ann Riddell, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation now from Washington, Lynn Goldman. She's dean at the School of Public Health and Health Services at George Washington University, pediatrician, epidemiologist, former assistant administrator for the EPA's Office of Prevention, Pesticides, and Toxic Substances. Lynn Goldman, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
I think a lot of people heard about this report last week, and it turned your head yet again. I mean, we kind of live in this limbo of knowing that there are lots of chemicals out there. They may not all be good for us. But we like to revert to an assumption that they must not be that bad or they wouldn't be in all these products. And then we look at the study, and they're in zillions of categories of products and particular products. I mean, are we simply living in an unsafe consumer product environment, Lynn?
Well, we're in an environment where we don't know the safety of many of the chemicals that are in the products that we're consuming. And we have a statute that is responsible for making sure that chemicals in our environment are safe. That statute has been in place now for 35 years. And it's been a long time since most of us have concluded that it needs to be strengthened. It's just not doing the job that the American public thinks that the law is doing in order to protect them.
You must have seen the list of chemicals here and know it well that the Silent Spring Institute's looking at. I mean, are they fair in calling out these particular chemicals, these parabens and phthalates and endocrine disruptors? Are they fair to point to these and say, danger?
Well, I think that I have to congratulate Julia Brody and Ruth Ann Riddell for doing an excellent study. I think that what they're showing is that these chemicals are very prevalent in products. It's not saying that the levels are too high in individual products. And in fact, I think that they were they They composited, they combined the products in order to see if they could detect them. But it opens up questions about safety, certainly. I think that we need to know what the levels are in individual products, and we need to know more about the effects of many of these chemicals. I'd say especially, for example, like the fragrances that haven't been very well studied in modern times, certainly, and some of these other substances that they've detected in products that we haven't known what the levels are in people because they haven't been evaluated in biomonitoring. I think we need to go back and look what are the exposure levels to people from being exposed to these products.
I just couldn't help wondering, Lynn, if we've got a consumer lifestyle here that just makes this meeting of danger in humans inevitable. I mean, if you took out all the products there that are shown to have some of these chemicals in them, you know, you wouldn't wash your hair, you wouldn't go in the sun, you wouldn't wear deodorant, you wouldn't wear perfume. You know, we'd be pale and greasy-haired and a little bit funky-smelling, but maybe we'd be healthier, Lynn.
It's possible. I mean, I'd also say that even though they detected chemicals in the so-called natural products, mm-hmm. The green products, they detected far fewer of them in those products than in the other products. And so I think that you can make a choice to have products that have fewer chemicals in them. And I also think that perhaps through work like their work, that manufacturers will be driven to eliminating many of these substances from their products, or at least reducing the levels so that the levels are safe. Because after all, it's not that every molecule of these is going to be hazardous. And what we don't know right now is whether the levels in these individual products are really at levels that are too high, that are dangerous.
We'll talk about what it might take to get those levels reduced, but people are really listening to this and looking for solutions. Jethro writes us, he says, okay, I get it. Just about everything I use, green or not, may kill me. Please give me solutions. Practical, everyday solutions. Don't tell me to contact my congressman. Don't tell me to start making my own soap. Don't tell me to go and buy designer goat milk soap for $9 a bar. What can I do practically to clean my home, my clothes, my children in a way that won't threaten my life? Julia.
Oh, thanks for your question, Jethro. But I am going to tell you to contact your congressman. I'm going to disobey you on that one because I do think we need some better management of chemicals use. In the meantime, you can use fewer products and switch to simpler products with fewer ingredients. Soap and water is great. Simple soap and water is great.
We could just start there. What's simple soap? Because, I mean, I look at soap, bar soap on here, and it's got a whole passel of check boxes here for chemicals in it. What makes a good bar soap or a less desirable bar soap?
That's a very good point. So the Castile soap is one of the products that came out with zero of our target chemicals.
Nothing. This is the old Dr. Bronner's.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you can read the labels looking for triclosan and triclocarban. These are the antibacterials. Those have to be labeled, so you can avoid them and buy soaps that don't contain them.
Okay, so the simpler soap, the better. What else? You're talking about for cleaning. You're saying steer away from some of those things that make the kitchen or your clothes quite so sparkly bright and go for, baking soda, vinegar.
I think you can make your kitchen just as clean without the fragrance. The fragrance isn't really a cleaner.
Okay. It's just part of the environment that makes us feel like, ooh-ah. So what do you use for cleaning? What is it? Is it just vinegar and baking soda? What are you suggesting?
I do use soap and water, baking mm-hmm. soda, vinegar. And I also use some products where I've read the label and it looks like a better choice.
Ruth Ann Rudell, I mean, here you are. You're the director of research. Do you really clear this stuff out of your life? Do you manage to live without it? Or is that just something that we're not culturally prepared to do despite the potential health risks here?
No, I try to shop carefully. I try to keep in mind. I think that some companies really are trying to make the safest products that they can. And other companies are really what we would call greenwashing. That is, they're kind of making the same old products, but marketing them to consumers who are worried, and that really is a problem that's hard to solve, and where I think some modernized regulation will help. I also was going to point out in terms of industry has responded and said that that government has approved these chemicals, but in fact, The only pesticides and drugs really are actually approved by governments, and other chemicals are are not explicitly approved. And EPA, in fact, is asking us for this data because they don't know what's in the products, and much less have they been able to evaluate the health effects of exposure to mixtures.
Boy, what a world! So it's out there. We're buying it. We're using it, but nobody's actively looked at whether it's worth signing off for with a kind of safety nod. Let's go to our listeners here. Michelle in Augusta, Georgia. Michelle, thanks very much for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I had a question. I have a 9-year-old daughter in third grade who came home from school about 2 weeks ago and told me that she was the only girl in her class who has not started her period.
In third grade?
And in third grade. She just turned 9.
Wow.
And I was shocked because, she's my oldest, and I thought, girls only start in their teens. So I called a lot of their moms, and they were all telling me that some of them had even started last year when they were 7. And I was at their school the other day, and I've noticed that little girls are starting to develop breasts, and their hips are curvier. And I'm thinking, my daughter, I've made a cognitive decision to keep as much garbage out of our lives as we possibly can. And she still has the look of a little girl. And I'm really wondering if all these different chemicals and preservatives and everything that's in our food and in all of our cleaning products and everything that we get exposed to in our everyday lives is what's making all these little girls develop at such a young age.
Michelle, let us pick it up. Lynn Goldman, is there a national trend that reflects what Michelle's seeing in her Augusta daughter's classroom there, and what can be done?
Well, yes and no. So I'm intrigued by what she said. There is a trend toward earlier puberty in girls, and that is something that has been of quite a bit of concern. And yet, to have, say, an entire classroom of girls going through puberty before or by the age of 9 would be very unusual, even in the light of the national trends that we have. I mean, I would say that you kind of don't expect a girl to go through puberty until she's around 11. So I would be very concerned about that in terms of what's going on.
Julia, what are you thinking as you hear
that community? Mm-hmm.
What are you thinking, Julia, as you hear that story from Augusta?
It is true that the age that girls are going through puberty is falling in the United States, and there's a national study going on right now. The National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences and the National Cancer Institute are collaborating on a study across the country of influences on puberty in girls. And they are finding more girls beginning to go through puberty at 9 or 10 than in earlier decades. And they are including in that study questions about whether these hormone disruptors that we're studying might be playing a role. So we will know more about that as that study unfolds.
Your institute is named after Rachel Carson. She wrote famously about pesticides many years ago now. And a lot of those pesticides were taken out of the environment. She, of course, died of breast cancer a couple years after she wrote that. A lot of those are at a much lower level. But cumulatively, are we surrounded by more chemicals today than we were when Rachel Carson wrote Silent Spring?
More chemicals have certainly come on the market since then. And interestingly, we found that those old chemicals are still hanging around inside our houses. In our household exposure study, we found about 2/3 of the homes in New England, in the Northeast, still have DDT inside.
So after all these years of consciousness about this, of awareness, concern, people wanting to get away from these threats, collectively, is our exposures just as great or greater today?
It's hard to say the answer to that, mm-hmm. but I think that the experience with DDT illustrates for us why we should be more cautious about putting chemicals into use and testing them before we do that. Because once you get a chemical that's persistent out into the environment, it stays there for a long time and stays in our homes ends up in our bodies for many decades.
We're talking today about dangerous chemicals in our everyday products. Julia Brody and Ruth Ann Rudell with Silent Spring Institute, please stand by. Lynn Goldman with the George Washington University, thanks for joining us as well. Please stand by there. Listeners, you can join us. How do we get around this problem? 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about chemicals in everyday products, unannounced, often unlabeled, all around us, suspected in everything from cancer to asthma, allergies. Julia Brody and Ruth Ann Rudell are with us from the Silent Spring Institute. They've just come out with the results of a big study on everyday products, green and conventional. You can see it at our website, onpointradio.org, just published in the Environmental Health Perspectives Journal. And it is unsettling. It's unsettling in a way that we've known about for a long time, but there it still is, and it's hard to know exactly what to do with it. They're with us today. Lynn Goldman is here from George Washington University. She's dean of the School of Public Health and Health Services. They're a pediatrician and epidemiologist. You can join us as well. Could we get manufacturers to just stop using these chemicals? And would we buy their products if they did? Do we want that extra sparkle, that fragrance, that gleam? Do we want it enough to die for it? And why do we still have these chemicals in our lives? We're at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We've got guests right here in Boston, in San Francisco, in Washington, and Marilyn calling from Woburn, Massachusetts. Marilyn, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I first became interested in this topic when I read the book Slow Death by Rubber Duck. And I wondered if you could please comment on the chemicals found in breast milk. And I wondered if you would be brave enough to state the 11 products that these chemicals were not found in. And the last thing is, how do you get these chemicals out of your body?
Julia, chemicals in breast milk to start with, and we'll come to the. I hope you've got the list of those that are, you got your sign off. But what about Marilyn's concern?
Chemicals in breast milk is a concern. It's one of the ways that we find out what people are exposed to. Breast milk, of course, is important because it reflects not only the mom's exposure, but also the baby's exposure, and exposure at a particularly critical period in life. So I think that
whatever's in a woman's body, or much of it, would show up in that milk, presumably.
Many of the chemicals that we have in our own bodies end up in breast milk.
So it's a kind of indicator of environmental chemical presence?
Yes. And the Europeans, in fact, have been using breast milk to track chemical exposures, and that would be a great thing to do here in the U.S. as well.
Is breast milk safer than the alternatives?
Breast milk, I'm sure Dr. Goldman will agree, breast milk is considered the best food for babies. We could make it better by ensuring that moms are protected from exposure to chemicals that then end up in breast milk.
What about the 11 you found out of these hundreds of products that got your all clear? Could you just rattle them off for us? Give us some idea?
I could. You can also go to silentspring.org for a complete list of all the products that we tested. We found some of these products have long names, so you'll have to stop me when you get sick of the list and send people to the website.
People want to know what kind of thing.
Seventh-generation diapers had no target compounds. The Bonami scrubbing powder, the seventh-generation dishwasher detergent, Tom's of Maine deodorant. It's a natural, long-lasting deodorant stick, aluminum-free, unscented.
Okay.
The Bean products, cotton shower curtain, the Excel Home Fashions nylon shower curtain. Was glad to see the extra light olive oil did not have any target compounds. People use that sometimes for wood, to give
cleaning,
wood a nice
a gleam. Yeah,
yeah. The Magic Botanicals hairspray, fragrance-free hairspray for the fragrance-sensitive.
Okay.
Did not have any target chemicals. The Castile soap, Dr. Bronner's Magic Soaps.
I mean, these are all rare. These are all interesting for how rare they are on your list to have zero. And some of them you'd hope they wouldn't, but these days it seems like almost everything does. So they send out some of these brands, even the green brands that you mentioned, seventh generation Toms and others. Those others of their products did have chemicals show up that are on your no-no list.
Yes, and seventh generation has responded to our study, saying that they don't intentionally put these chemicals into their products. So that raises a question of potentially something in their supply chain, or contamination during the manufacturing process. And we hope that companies, the green companies, will go back and look at their production systems and remove chemicals in the future.
Ruth Ann Riddell in San Francisco, is it possible these days to manufacture products without these things being introduced? I mean, if they're in the dust in our homes, the dust beneath our feet, you know, a lot of these factories, it's not like they're semiconductor factories where everything's vacuum-packed and everybody's wearing jumpsuits.
Well, I mean, they're in our dust because they're in our products. And I'll say, you know, our world is made up of chemicals. And mm-hmm. So we're focusing here on some where there's some concern, some potential health concern. And in some cases, there's also a benefit. So obviously with sunscreens, with UV filters, what we're seeking is a product that will protect us from the sun, but not disrupt our hormone systems. Parabens also are preservatives. We don't actually want bacteria growing in some of our products, and so there's a need again to develop the safest products we can. Triclosan is really marketed wildly as this antibacterial. Anything labeled antibacterial. Mm-hmm. Has triclosan or triclocarban. I'm particularly worried about those because actually I think the biomonitoring that the Centers for Disease Control does it shows that the exposures in the population are actually approaching levels where you see health effects in laboratory, particularly in cell culture studies. And the FDA has actually come out clearly with a statement saying that those that is no better than soap and water at getting germs off your hands. And in fact, the Kaiser, big healthcare provider here on the West Coast, has not using it in any of their facilities.
Lynn Goldman, what about that? I was just talking with a colleague who at her children's school, when it comes lunchtime, they don't wash their hands with soap and water. They all just get a squirt of antibacterial lotion. And off they go. I mean, in some ways, we've moved away from the simplest solutions to cleanliness here and introduced by our consumer habits or maybe our concern about microbes, things that could be a risk factor.
You're right. And the thing is that the hand sanitizers are convenient, but they actually don't work as well as washing. And it's one thing to wash with soap and water. Some of the soaps have these antimicrobials in them. I don't think that it's necessary, and it's one way that you can minimize your exposure is by not buying products that are labeled antimicrobial, antibacterial, because they're almost certainly going to contain triclosan or triclocarban, and it's just not necessary. And the other thing that's easy to do is to look for products that are unscented, and because the scents also are not necessary, and many of the scents are on these lists of products that either, can aggravate asthma or actually are compounds that are potentially endocrine active. And there's no reason to have a scent in your laundry detergent, in your hand cream, in every single product with which you have contact.
I want to go back to this issue of the threat level in all of this. I mean, we can drive ourselves crazy when we see these lists that show the chemicals in almost in so many of these products. On the other hand, as Ruth Ann points out, I mean, we live in, the planet is made up of chemistry. I don't know what kind of concern level American citizens should have about this level of this chemical presence in so many consumer products, Lynn. I mean, are we running screaming out of our house saying, I can't live in there anymore, it's just too dangerous, people are getting cancer, I can't do it? Or is it tolerable? If it's not tolerable, why is it the reality we're living in?
So the study says that the chemicals are present in these products, but it doesn't say that the amounts are too high in individual products. And so I think that people don't need to be panicked about this, but I do think that there's cause for just being attentive to what it is that you're introducing, what it is that you're using. Avoiding the excessive use of products where you don't need a product, where soap and water would do just as well. And then I think that we do need to pay attention to what's going on a broader level in terms of putting pressure on the manufacturers and also on Congress to make sure that somebody is looking at these substances and looking at these products to make sure that they're safe before they're allowed in our homes.
Eben is calling from Patton, Vermont. Eben, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you. I approached this topic and actually many more topics like it when we're talking about these, you know, extra products in our lives that we claim are making ourselves better or improving our lives. I don't shun away from the political battle that is probably required to turn some of this over, but from a libertarian standpoint, it's a consumer. This is a consumer problem. We all buy into this whole industry of product, and we're the ones enabling it. As the people that are going through the shopping aisles, taking this stuff off the shelves, we're endorsing these products every single time we buy them. And as a the most profound and easiest fix to this is to start tomorrow. Don't buy them anymore. You know, all these fragrance, deodorants, and all this kind of stuff. The other side of this argument that only should just be touched on, but people should keep, I think, in their mind, is that these products are packaged in plastic bottles with lids and foils and wrappers that all end up in the ocean eventually, in these big gyres in the ocean. Mm-hmm. So we're making ourselves less healthy, and we're contributing on a massive scale to pollution for things we don't even need. And that's a broad view of our entire economy, as far as I'm concerned. But to the scope of your discussion today, anything that's not necessary, well, I don't know why we're necessarily buying it and dealing with all of the impacts of our health or the environment.
Right, we got it, Eben. So just pull away from some of that consumption. And then here's another listener online says, I've spent time with the Amish. No chemicals. You can eat off the floors. Very clean. It's wood, water, sun. Very few, if any, plastics. We can learn a lot from these hardworking old-type lifestyle people. But yet we live in this world. Eben says, well, okay, just, you know, withdraw. That's hard to do. One way to do it would be discerning. Julia Brody, look at the labels and see what's in there. But a lot of these chemicals are not necessarily even on a label, if I read your study correctly, Julia.
Yes, right now manufacturers are not required to completely disclose what's in their products. And so we did find many chemicals that were not on the labels.
What does that mean? If there are concerns around these products, does this go to Lynn Goldman's comment about statutes and what we should require by law? I mean, if there are problems or issues or even just concerns, why wouldn't they be on the label?
I think consumers would like to know what's in their products, and some manufacturers have been responding to that by putting out more complete lists. I also think, though, that you shouldn't have to go shopping with a chemistry degree. We can't, as individuals, very effectively evaluate the whole wide range of chemicals, and there is need for some kind of agreement across society about how we're going to test chemicals to be sure they're safe.
Let's go to Jason in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Jason, you're on the air.
The question is about immediate response to certain chemicals and not down the road, and that is, in particular, fragrances that are added to products and the organic compounds that make them volatile and carry them into the atmosphere. My question is whether these types of fragrances and the amounts that are used are on the increase, or if an individual like myself acquires greater sensitivity. I have to stay out of elevators, stairwells, sometimes leave rooms, can't use washing machines that other people use, and it's of great concern. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Jason. Lynn, what about the notion of a kind of arms race here, where the punch of fragrances is actually being cranked up as consumers maybe get used to a sort of fragrance base here. It takes more to stand out. Do you see evidence of that, Lynn?
Oh, I think it's certainly true that that's part of the kind of, if you may, the competition among manufacturers. And there's a lot of research going on all the time, trying to identify better fragrances and more appealing fragrances. And, I mean, fragrances are put in products because for most of us, there's some appeal. And why is that? We like the odors for, maybe they're doing something in our brains. I don't know. But I think that your caller is raising an interesting point, which is that for some people, these very same fragrances produce very strong negative responses. And it's very hard for them to get away from these fragrances because of the ubiquity in products and that most of us are using and frankly don't even notice.
David in Oak Grove, Kentucky. You're on the air, David.
Yes, hi, Tom. Hi. I was wanting to bring up an issue. I worked in the pesticide industry for a number of years as a young man in in the 70s, and I'm infertile today, and I think it could be because of my exposure to a chemical called chlordane, which is used to kill termites.
Okay.
And what people don't realize, you buy a home and your children go outside and they go next to the foundation and they dig around and play in the dirt, and there is a high probability that they could be exposed to this chemical, and it has a lifespan of 90 years, and it will, it did in my case, or it's my theory, cause you'd be not able to have children.
Wow. 90 years is a long time. I apologize, David. Our time is short, but you drive home how important it is to be aware of the chemicals in our environment, and I thank you for that. And one more, Dean in Hyde Park, Massachusetts. Dean, our time is short. What do you say?
Just to one of the caller's previous caller's points about the amount of plastic packaging, about 2 years ago, I began making almost all of my personal care and I think all of my household cleaning products. And I want to encourage all of your listeners, because they hear something like that and they think, oh, God, here's another crazy liberal.
How do you do it? What do you make them out of?
But I can tell you it is an entirely doable and manageable process. Now that it's part of my routine, I don't even think about it.
Give us an example, David. What do you make? How?
So, I mean, using a combination of things like castile soap, vinegar, baking soda, olive oil, some essential oils, aloe. I make everything from shampoo, body wash, cleaning spray, stuff to clean the floor, stuff to polish the furniture. I mean, you name it, I'm using it. And it's easy. It is easy and doable. People think it isn't. They think they couldn't possibly do it. I used to think that. But once I started doing it, it is such an easy process and I feel so much better. As I said, initially it was about the plastic packaging, but clearly I don't want to be bringing these chemicals into my house or putting them into my body.
We can hear your pride and satisfaction in doing it. Do you feel safer?
I feel enormously safer doing it. I mean, I know that there's still stuff I'm exposing myself to, but I'm taking some control, over what I bring into my house and put into my body. So yeah, I do feel safer.
Dean, bravo to you. Maybe there's a way with some of the simplest ingredients put together, in many ways, to keep that house a little safer. To the Silent Spring Institute, I want to say thanks for having this study done and bringing us these details today. There's a lot more we can learn here, but you remind us to keep our eye on this and on this as a public issue. Ruth Ann Riddell, Director of Research in San Francisco. Ruth Ann, thank you so much for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
And Julia Brody, Executive Director at Silent Spring. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Lynn Goldman at George Washington University, Dean of the School of Public Health and Health Services there. Thank you very much, Lynn. It's always great to hear from you.
Thank you, Tom. Goodbye.
Listeners, good luck. Be aware. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.